Here we go. We are live with the Breakup Podcast. And we have my wonderful guest, Kaylin. Thank you so much. I'm so happy you're here today.
I'm happy to be here.
And I have my fantastic co-host. I don't know what I would do without you.
Oh, that's Brother so Jacob. Nice of you to say.
That's so nice of you to say. So nice of you to say. I really do. I don't know. You guys are great. All are great. I shouldn't say you guys. It's a bad habit that I have. I'm from Texas. So, all right. So welcome to the Breakup Podcast, the breakup event where we talk about all things breakups. I'd say it's probably the number one breakup podcast.
Number one.
In the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say in the universe.
Yes.
Like all, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
hi.
The extraterrestrials are...
In the universe. Yes, yes, yes. Of course.
Definitely on Chandler Boulevard for sure.
Shout out to Chandler. Represent your hood. Okay. So we're going to get into our guest today. So where are you from?
Phoenix, Arizona. Desert.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And growing up, what were relationships like in your life? Did you have a two-parent household? Were your parents married?
Mm-hmm. Parents were married. Still are married.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. How long ago?
I would say, well, see, they've been married for about 37, 38 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long have you ever been married?
I have.
Okay. And how long was your marriage?
Well, I kind of lumped two people into it, even though.
You were married to two people.
Well, okay. So I was married for 2 years, got divorced, immediately got into another relationship for another 2.5 years. So 5 years span. Of people, but 2 years officially married. But these people were so similar that it could have been the same person. Mm-hmm. So that's how I feel. But it's a complicated thing. So, but yes, married early 20s time.
If you had to guess, how many committed relationships would you say you've been in your lifetime?
Five?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And were they long-term? Meaning that some people will say five and they're like, I've been in five and the longest relationships are like, 6 to 7 months. How long would you say?
About two. I would say each one of them, I think 2.5 years, 1.5 to 2.5 years. Those are the cutoffs. Those seem to be the times where there's a split for me. So
I see.
Yeah.
And your last relationship, the most recent breakup that you had, how long ago was that?
Oh, it's also, I feel like everything I say is a little complicated.
Really? Was it on and off?
No.
Okay.
So we were together for about a year-ish. We broke up, I would say a year and a half ago, but then I attempted to be friends with him for a long period of time. And we've gone, and since that's been no contact for about 7 months. So technically the breakup happened a year and a half ago, but I spent a lot of time hoping that we'd get back together and trying to be his friend and having this kind of like, maybe we'll get back together feeling. So I don't think for me it was really a breakup until I felt the breakup and no contact. And I finally said no, but technically a year and a half.
Okay. And who initiated the breakup?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all were together for how long?
I would say about a year.
So y'all were
not
together
great
for
with
a
time,
year. And
but yeah. You were I think something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He may have a different story.
Really?
But
what do you think his story would be?
I don't know. He probably could look at the dates. Mm-hmm. And I don't have them in front of me. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like maybe he's better. I don't know.
Right.
But to me, it was about a year. Yeah.
Right. And did he say why?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this kind of, I think with, it was a very passionate relationship. And what happened through that is we all have trauma and triggers. And I think we kind of mirrored each other's wounds in a way. Mm-hmm. So we kept doing this dance. And it's kind of like that for me, I had this desire to like, maybe we can heal this thing together, this thing, these patterns that keep playing out in both of our interpersonal relationships because they're not going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of really wanting to commit to that. And then he finally said, I don't have space for this anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened. And it was devastating. Right. So, yeah.
Do you feel like y'all were trauma bonding?
I was thinking about that and I've looked into it and I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think there was a differentiation in the way we handled our conflict versus in the past where I would label it more as trauma bonding. Mm-hmm. I would say we just kind of were two people that were trying to figure it out. And because of the trauma, it didn't really work out. So
your trauma, his trauma,
both of us. Yeah.
Okay. And he was just like, it's just not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you spent 7 months trying to make it work, like yourself. And
he broke up with me, and then we didn't talk. I was like, I can't talk to you for a few months, but I really wanted to be his friend because he was like my best friend in a way, and like we supported each other in that way, and we talked a lot, and we had this connection. So I was really just like, I can make a friendship work with him. Mm-hmm. And so finally I opened it back up and I said, okay, you know, I want to try this to be friends. And we talked about it throughout. And I noticed as I was attempting to be his friend, the moment we went no contact was he told me he was going to start dating other people. Mm-hmm. And I lost it. So then I was like, oh, I haven't been just wanting to be his friend. I have been waiting. And then I realized that was not in alignment with my values, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and also not fair to me or to him. And I realized in that moment I had so much anger and so much grief that was unprocessed that I was like, I can't be your friend. Mm-hmm. So that is when I said, we've been no contact for about that long. And I don't foresee us ever connecting again. I don't see why. So.
And when you guys were broken up, but still friends, were you acting like you were a couple, even though you weren't? Or were you guys, were there friendship boundaries? Like
there
did
were
the
definitely
relationship change?
Friendship, but I tried, you know, I tried to kiss him once when I was, I didn't try to kiss. I just said we were celebrating I finished my dissertation, mm-hmm. and he came to my dinner and he brought flowers and it was really mm-hmm. lovely. And he's just a kind person. So I think that's just what he would do. And then I was drinking and then mm-hmm. I was like, I really want to kiss you. And he said, I don't think that's a good idea. So stuff like that would happen. And I think we were intimate. Closer to the me going no contact, we were intimate once. And I think he said to me, you know, like afterwards I was emotional. He said to me, I'm afraid you can't like mm-hmm. compartmentalize this thing. And I'm like, how could anyone? What do you mean? So that also was an indication. But in that span, I would say we were able to kind of maintain a friendship. Like we played video games together and we'd talk about our day and kind of check in on family, things like that. So, mm-hmm. but when we were together in close proximity, and I think this was a story of our whole relationship, it was hard. It was hard for me not to want to like just be close to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers the question, but.
I mean, it's hard to like break out of that pattern, right?
Right.
Like it's hard to switch off and switch roles or whatever.
Especially if you're still in love with someone.
Right.
I mean, that's, it wasn't fair to either of us for me to mm-hmm. kind of lie to myself. But yeah.
Right. It felt good in the moment. Like, hey, I still want to have a connection to this person.
He was really, and I still am like, man, I wish I could get his perspective on this or I wish we could connect. But the self-preservation is more important mm-hmm. than that. And also, to be fair to whoever our future partners are, if you have a friendship with someone that you mm-hmm. were so deeply in love with, it just doesn't, to me, for me, in my heart, I don't think that would be fair to anyone.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
You said y'all had a long-distance relationship.
Yes.
Where were you and where was he?
I was in Tucson and he was in Los Angeles.
Okay. And, but you're in Los Angeles now.
Yes.
Okay. Did you move here because of him?
No. I always had a... So we met in L.A.
Yeah, how did y'all meet?
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy story because we met back in, I would say, 2009.
Okay.
And we didn't really connect as friends. It was a co-worker thing. We were working at the same establishment. He was a bartender and I was a server.
Mm-hmm. In LA.
In LA.
Okay, got it.
And mm-hmm. we didn't, in Hollywood. And we mm-hmm. didn't really, we just knew of each other and we didn't really work many shifts together. And it was just this kind of, okay, we're going to follow each other on social media. And it was just, you know, kind of part of my circle.
Right.
And then I moved to Tucson because I wanted to focus on my research for my dissertation and I didn't want to get distracted by the amazing love I have for California.
Yeah.
So I, and the finances as well. So I was like, I just need to find a place to buckle down, not be tempted by anything. And mm-hmm. My parents are in Phoenix. So it's like Tucson, and Tucson is a little bit more progressive in their political stances.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll go to Tucson. He sees that I was in Tucson on my Instagram. He said, oh, I'm from Tucson. I'm visiting my family. Do you want to get tea? And then mm-hmm. we did, and then we just kept talking for hours. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So it was a weird kind of like, and being with him was also a rehashing of that time in my life when I did work in Hollywood, and we kind of had this nostalgia feeling to us where we would be like, oh, you know, when I came to visit LA, mm-hmm. like, here's where I lived before. Here's why we were kind of excited about, wow, we kind of knew each other then, and we didn't really know each other, and now we know each other, and we can kind of share that period with us, mm-hmm. like, in an interesting way. So, yeah, that is how that worked. And then what happened was I couldn't make – one, my car was already dying, and mm-hmm. it's already gone now, but – to go back and forth to LA was really challenging for me. So I didn't do it. Yeah. I was also working on the research. So it was mostly up to him to kind of see me. Mm-hmm. And it was challenging because he also had to see his family.
Right.
There's also COVID, and he had a job where he was around, you know, he couldn't be masked, mm-hmm. and he was working with people in close contact, and I was worried about COVID. So there were a few different factors that made it a really pressurized thing.
Right.
But I had always had the intention to come back to LA. Like I kind of call LA home.
Yeah.
Even before mm-hmm. meeting him.
Right.
It just happened to be. And then when I moved here, I was like, oh, do you want to try again? And he wasn't interested. So
oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Which was also hard. Yeah.
Yeah. How long from that first meeting of tea and great conversation to actually being official?
Oh, you're asking me all these dates.
Oh, well, not well, approximately, like around, like
I
not
would
exact.
Say
like,
it was only like a few weeks.
Okay.
I originally didn't want anything. And I said, I just need a friendship right now. Mm-hmm. We don't know what this is. We clearly have chemistry. We can't stop talking. But I can't get involved with anyone in a romantic way. That was kind of my position.
Right.
And I think a lot of the relationship at the beginning was me kind of being ambivalent towards kind of oscillating between I can't have a romantic relationship and also I'm attracted to you. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, the more we hung out in person as friends, there was just this like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of like a feeling of familiarity mm-hmm. and like just wanting, not necessarily from a sexual point or an intimacy point, but just wanting to like touch each other
yeah.
or like hold hands or like,
mm-hmm.
so that was hard to fight.
Yeah, yeah. Warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the breakup happened when you moved here? Like you?
A few months before I moved here.
Okay. So you were never really living in the same city. The relationship was longest since the
yep.
entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yep.
And once you were and had the opportunity to be in the same city, that's when he decided to break things off.
Well, he decided to break things off before I moved.
And where are you from originally?
Phoenix.
Okay.
He decided to break things off when I was still in Tucson. And then I think a few months, so we went no contact for a few months. And then I always had a plan to get to LA, and I was like, I'm going to LA, I'm moving, and I'm not talking to him. And then I opened up the friendship again once I moved, mm-hmm. and we saw each other a few times, and talked on the phone and whatnot. And then I realized through that experience that I was waiting for him kind of to come around, because I was like, oh, now we're finally in LA. And it is sad to me, because I'm like, we're finally in the same city and you don't want to give this a try and you're going to go date other people now. So that was all a hard pill to swallow for me. Mm-hmm.
Right. Cause you felt like you guys had like a special connection or whatever. And he's just kind of, well, I mean, he's like you said, he broke it off. So he's not feeling the same thing.
No. Mm-hmm. And I think, and at the end of our breakup, it was interesting because, I had a jealousy moment where he went to dinner. He was in LA. I was in Tucson. And I think the jealousy came up a lot because I couldn't be near him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just jealousy that he would potentially do something. It was jealousy because I wanted to be in the same space as him.
Right.
And he was doing all these fun things with people and I wasn't part of it. So he went to dinner in LA with like his ex and like a few other people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of was very triggered, mm-hmm. and kind of reacted a lot. And now I know like there were certain things, like one, I'm valid. I was valid and I wasn't made to feel valid. So that was already like an issue there, but mm-hmm. I didn't see it at the time. And I was kind of made to feel like I was just the jealous.
Right.
Person. Mm-hmm. I don't think he did that intentionally, but that definitely was how it felt. And
how did you find out about this dinner?
He just told me.
Okay. Yeah.
He told, mm-hmm. he was very open about everything. He was, that's the thing about him that I really loved, was he was, even when things were hard, he just told me and he was honest. Even the breakup was like, he's just honest with me. But he did that and there was, you know, nothing going on. She's come out as queer now. And I'm like, but sexuality is on a spectrum. Like, I don't understand. Anyway, that's how I was like, so he's like, you have nothing to worry about because now she dates women. And I'm like, I don't see it black and white.
You still
way.
Didn't feel better about it.
No,
like,
I didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're still your ex. You've still seen this woman naked. Like,
exactly.
Just so you know, so anyone you've seen naked and had sex with, I'm still not.
Right. I was like, how could you like literally have tasted this person?
Yeah.
And then be like, oh no, it's fine. You shouldn't care about it. So that happened and I kind of lost it and I was invalidated and that made it me spiral more. And then he said this thing to me that, and he's like, I don't know what this is, but I'll be here on the other side of it. And I was like, okay, great. Like now I can show all my raw self and I have him here. I know he will be here. And then the next night I was like, look, this is what I need out of a relationship. This is my intention with the relationship. What is your intention? And he said, oh, I'm just trying to figure out if it's healthy, is what he was saying. And I said, oh, that's interesting, because my intention is to make this work and to work on a team, be a team and develop a partnership. And those are very different approaches. If you're questioning, is this healthy or not? And I'm saying, let's work on this. Those are different. So I realized that.
They sound the same to me in a way, meaning that you're trying to see if this could work, but isn't trying to see if the relationship is healthy to move forward to see if it can work somewhat the same thing.
I think the intent, the perspectives are different. So one is a testing. And it kind of felt like that throughout the relationship, which I did to him at the beginning, but then it kind of transferred to him with testing my reaction to things or seeing, is this pattern, like kind of seeing that. And I was more like, okay, I see these things and I think we can figure them out. But I think with him, there was, because of that perspective, and I can't speak for him really, I just know my own experience. But because of that perspective, there was a stopping for how much we could work on the patterns. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was like committed to, let's solve this. So I think I hear you, and I think they're similar, but they're also just like kind of a nuanced difference in approach. Mm-hmm. One feels more like a fear-based approach, and the other feels more a little bit of fear, but also kind of this desire to have a committed situation where we develop together. So I don't know if that's
differentiation makes sense. It is perception. It definitely is how, you know, you both are trying to see if it's going to work, basically.
Right. And I think, so after that, the next day, he told me he went to therapy. And
after you told him,
what do you need? Do you need? And he's in that conversation. He said, I don't know what I need. And I said, this is what I need. I need to be able to be validated. I need to be able to feel jealous if these things come up. It doesn't mean you change the way you are, but it does mean I need to be able to say I'm jealous of this thing and not be invalidated by that. So I kind of had this list of here's what I'm needing. What are you needing? And he's like, I don't know. And then
He went to therapy.
He went to therapy and then he came and he broke up with me after that.
After therapy.
After me saying, you know, this is what I need. What do you need? And he essentially was like, well, I need to break up. And it was really hitting a fear of abandonment that I have because the week right before that, he said, I don't know what this is, but I'll be here at the end of it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, actually, I can't do this anymore.
And that's a weird thing to say, though, because it's cryptic, you know? Like,
right.
It's like, what is going on right now and what is on the other end? Those are not defined.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
It's kind of messing with you a little bit, I think, that quote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It leaves like a gray space for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhat a selfish thing to say, too, because you don't know how you're going to feel tomorrow. The way you feel today is not how you feel tomorrow.
Right.
So telling someone that you're going to be there on the other side when they're ready is like,
yeah,
kind of I think it's foolish to say. I'm sure he didn't mean to do that. But like you just said, he said that thing to you. And then all of a sudden he's just like, I can't be what you need. So we need to break up.
Yeah.
I'm actually not on the other side.
I'll be on the other side alive.
Right. Exactly. I'll be on their side and I'll be broken
alive,
up.
You know?
And it was like so devastating because I was in the middle of a trauma trigger situation over the jealousy. And then what that did for my inner child was say, oh, Kaylin, you are too much. This person who said they'd be here, they're not here because you are too much.
Mm-hmm. I don't view being too much. I honestly see myself as too much, to be honest with you. But I get what you're saying, that it makes you feel abandoned when someone says, oh, I can't deal with the things that she has going on. And it sucks. Can I ask you, are you in therapy or have you ever been to therapy or were you in therapy during this time?
I am a huge... I've been in therapy consistently weekly since 2017.
Okay.
And I've been in and out my whole life. But in this period when I was with him and when these triggers were happening, I started going to therapist twice a week and I started doing EDMR and I got really heavily into dialectical behavioral therapy and I've been working really hard on myself.
Yeah.
So, and he's been in therapy for a long time too. And we both kind of are those advocates of like I see it as a lifetime indefinite. I will always be in therapy because I feel the mental health facet of things is so important. And it's just like anything else. And I'm actually going back to school for clinical social work now. So I can have a license and I could practice because I have this love of that. So, so absolutely. I mean, yeah.
What is a... And I can't even get the word right. Or be a dialectical.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that? I don't know what that is.
Right? Yeah. No, I'm glad to talk about it. So have you heard of CBT? Cognitive behavioral therapy?
Okay. A little bit. Yeah. Mm.
So it's more, it's like a behavioral change type of therapeutic approach where it's like skills and ways you can approach things of, let's say you're afraid of spiders. you would go through these steps to confront that and to start changing the behavior. Dialectical behavioral therapy is something created from Marsha Linehan. She's a psychologist, and she went and she studied in the East under Zen Buddhist practice, and she brought that into CBT and developed this dialectical behavioral therapy. And originally, it was her using it in suicidal patients and with people with borderline personality disorder, and that's how it came about. And then now that she's developed it, we've learned that everyone could benefit from it because it's like mindfulness, interpersonal skills. There's just this huge booklet of different skills based on anything you can deal with emotional regulation or just being more present. So that is, so that's what it is. I don't know if that.
Yeah. Now I'm like, probably what's not the difference between it all, but. What's the difference between the two, dialectical and CBT?
CBT tends to be more, I don't want to say invalidating because that is not fair, probably.
Okay.
But I think DBT, I'll just say how DBT sets itself apart and then go from there. But it's more of a validating approach. And it's more saying, you are valid in feeling this way. You are valid but you need to accept your reality. And then from there, we can start changing things. And just because you're valid doesn't mean that it's within the facts of what you're behavior is. I think CBT is more of this, I don't know. I think a lot of people feel like CBT is, I don't know how to describe this without, it's just a different approach. Yeah. And I think, DBT is more of it brings in the Eastern tradition more. Mm-hmm. So it's more focused on developing an experience that allows for living in the dialectic, which is like the middle space between two opposing poles. And I can't speak on CBT, I guess, too much because one, I might say something wrong because I'm not familiar with it, but I do know that a lot of people on the interwebs will say they feel invalidated by the CBT approach.
Got it. Okay. So you were saying that you've been in therapy for a long period of time and that, you feel like it'll be a lifelong thing.
Yes.
In feeling validated in your feelings, I guess what I want to know is that, do you feel like he didn't accept the needs and he wasn't willing to work on it, and you felt like you could possibly make that work, and that was your goal in saying, hey, let's be friends and maybe...
Like, say it, what do you mean? Say it differently?
Meaning that, forgive me.
It's okay.
So, whenever you told him, hey, I feel like I need this X, Y, and Z, I need all of these things.
Yes.
And he came back to you and he was just like, I can't fulfill these things that you need. You saying that, hey, I think that if we're friends and just friends, and like you... Later on, just admit it, you were lying to yourself. But do you I feel like you were saying that you thought that maybe subconsciously that the friendship would lead back to a relationship.
Yes. Okay. And I also, it was kind of interesting because while we were friends, we also were processing things together about our relationship kind of in this interesting way of like, when the dust settled, like he would say things of like, oh, I found he's actually training to be a therapist as well. And he's like, oh, I learned this today in school. And I realized that like we were focused on your emotional, like I was focused on your emotional reactivity and I wasn't realize how I was contributing to the patterns. And he's like, so I'm sorry for that. I'm investigating that. So things like that we would share throughout the friendship as well.
Right.
And it kind of felt like, oh, we're addressing these issues now as friends. So I definitely think you're like, that was my maybe hidden agenda was well, maybe we can now, if we're friends and we detach from the pressure of a relationship, we could figure this out in a different way. It's interesting because we've been no contact, and in that no contact, I've grown so much as a human. And good. The things that he complained about, that he didn't like about me, like about our dynamic, I don't even do anymore. So it's kind of interesting. And I'm like, okay, that's clearly we needed that, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Is there a part of you that feels like now that I don't do these things that were issues in our relationship, maybe it could work?
There's a part, I would be lying if I said there wasn't a part of me that still hopes for him.
Yeah.
But I know that part of me is just a grieving child. Right. I think now it's more of a thought of, haha, I've changed these things. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to experience them. Like, that's an ego driven feeling I have. But I honestly I've thought about this a lot. If like he were to come to me tomorrow. I don't know how I would react. Before today, before this period in my life, I would have said, oh, well, we would work it out. But now the things that happened were so hurtful to me. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because the invalidation is a big piece to my trauma. And there were instances where there were a lot of – so I'd been – cheated on like several times in my life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he was a very trustworthy person. I didn't see him as that type of person, but he would be in situations that made me feel like that situation with his ex, or like silly things like social media never posting us, or things that would just feel like fuel that a little bit. And when I would try to bring it up, it would be just like dismissed. Yeah. So those memories, I don't know. I feel like there might be too much there to ever try anything again.
He would never post you on anything on social media?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
After a year of being together, no idea that y'all were in a relationship.
Well, he would tell me, people in my life know that we're together. Why does the internet, social media need to know? And I'm like, but you have all these, your exes posted, and
he had his exes posted on social media, but not you.
Right.
Yeah. That would make me feel some kind of way.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, you know, like
what was his excuse for that?
Because he didn't want to throw away those periods in his life. And I'm like, well, you could just archive it.
Okay.
Right. But I also, he was like somebody that was like, I refuse to be controlled. And I think his stuff revolved around feeling controlled by people.
Yeah.
So when I would bring it up, he'd be like, I'm not going to be controlled over what I put on Instagram. Right.
Meanwhile, being controlled by Instagram.
Right. You know? Yeah. Exactly. Which is funny. But he hardly posted on that too. That was his other thing of like, well, I haven't posted in like a year. So I got it, and I didn't even say, oh, I want you to delete these things. I just said, you know, it feels hard for me.
I think, I mean, just as a general rule, no matter who you are, if like you have a social media page and like it's not healthy to have pictures of your exes up, you know, like you can have those pictures for yourself,
right?
But whatever that is, like you should just take that down,
right?
For them too, probably, or whatever.
Yeah, and it was a whole, like, it wasn't just their photos; it was a whole like sonnet about how much he loved them, and I was like, okay. I would read that, and it would be unhealthy for me because I would keep going back to it, and I'd be like, you haven't written anything about me, you haven't. Like given me, I would say to him, you're a writer. Mm-hmm. Why don't I get anything, you know, romantic? And he would came up with an excuse of, oh, well, you've never offered to read one of my things that I've written. I'm like, well, send it. I read it immediately and still nothing. And it was a big contrast to the guy I dated before that. He was absolutely stand up guy. And I kind of still am like, did I make a mistake with him? Because he was so lovely, and he would just write me cards, give me, like, I mean, my last ex gave me flowers, but like there was this like romanticism to the relationship before him, and I don't think I I think it was a good choice to leave because the one before him, but he definitely offered this space of stability and validation that I had gotten used to that this new person wasn't doing.
Yeah. Is there a reason you left such a great person?
It was incompatible intellectually and spiritually. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't feel like we could have like long conversations about the things I love or the things he loves because we didn't connect in that way. And I think there's also, to be honest, psychologically, I probably have the chemistry is somehow bound to my early upbringing and my like association with, oh, this is exciting. This thing is exciting. And he wasn't like exciting. And it could have been, I think it was partially my trauma from childhood. And also I would talk to a lot of friends at that time and I would keep trying. Mm-hmm. I just kept trying. And I was just, it just got to a point where I felt like I was stringing him along it wasn't fair because the way he loved was so so amazing. And now he's engaged and I'm really happy for him. So
good for him. Oh, he sounds like a great guy.
He is.
I was about to say, is he still single?
He's a great guy. And he has a great family and all these things that, I really valued. But at the end of the day, I was just like, I can't keep, it's not working in the way I'm envisioning a partnership.
Okay. So go ahead.
Just interesting how, you know, the people who are sometimes nicer to you, you know, and actually giving are the people that you don't quite emotionally connect with or whatever, you know, it's just like unfair.
It sucks. Yeah. It sucks. And I know it's like there's that saying that if a person feels like home and you come from a traumatic home, maybe that's a sign that they're not the right fit. They're perpetuating this thing. And I'm like, I don't know. It's challenging to parse apart all of these parts of things. But I see your face.
I think that sentence is weird. Like if it feels good, it must be too good. Don't do that. Right. Like what?
Right.
Well, I think
that's weird.
I think they say this because I'm a domestic violence survivor. And I think they say this a lot with like the people you've been picking. You need to go complete opposite because clearly I'm picking not that this last person is an abuser because he's absolutely not. But in the past, I was picking abusers and then because they felt right to me. Mm-hmm. And then the common saying with people who've gone through those things is like you need to just get with someone who doesn't feel right then, feels uncomfortable, doesn't feel like home in that way. So I think that is the common sentiment. But I will say with this past relationship that we're talking about now, it didn't feel like it felt comfortable. It felt like home, but he wasn't at all like the people from my past. So I just think we had this level of incompatibility where we mirrored each other in a really, in a way that wasn't working.
Can I ask you, do you feel like the pickings in the past with the bad behavior and you saying that that's normally what you would pick?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's something stemming from like childhood or the home you grew up in?
Absolutely.
Did you grow up in an abusive household?
I love my parents and I've worked really hard to develop a very good relationship with them where, and I don't know, it's hard to approach these things because I want to preface it by saying I know we're all human and I know we're all doing the best we can with what we have.
Yeah.
And they both come from really more traumatic households than what they created for me. So they worked really hard to give me a better life than they had. And there was a lot of abuse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they don't see it that way.
Towards you or towards your mother?
Towards each other. And then I was an only child, so I would become involved. Mm-hmm. I would get like dragged into it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't identify it that way. They don't see – when I talk about my childhood with them, it's like, oh, you're it was perfect. You're a perfect child. Perfect. And I was like, what do you mean? I got kicked out of school and I did these other things. And so absolutely. It was, I saw examples of my examples as a child of relationships were very unhealthy.
Yeah.
So it's taken me a long time to kind of reprogram things and say, well, what does a healthy relationship look like? Mm-hmm. And it feels like I'm like a kind of this infant in figuring out how to have healthy, not just romantic relationships, but all relationships, because the setup was very unhealthy.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people from their generation had too. So it's, you know, but that's not fair. I can't justify, I'm not going to justify that, but I just, because I do that a lot. Because I don't want to, because I do love them.
Yeah, abuse is wrong no matter what.
Right.
Whether it, you know.
Right.
Everyone does it or not, it's wrong.
Yeah. I feel a lot of parents, too, have kind of like this revisionist history or whatever, you know, like, you had the greatest time, you know what I mean, or whatever. Yeah. It was good. What are you complaining about?
I took you to Disneyland when you were six, remember?
Right.
And then they also, like, I mean, at least in my case, you know, I can bring up specific instances of things that happen. And they will just be like, no, that never happened, kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, yeah.
Like, remember when I called the cops because you were fighting and then you got mad at me? Like, no.
That never happened.
What do you mean? They didn't, I haven't brought that up, but it's like stuff, like, you can't say, oh, the childhood was so perfect if an incident like that happened.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
like,
not.
I think, but I think, and you're absolutely right. It's like, and because people don't want, if there's this fabrication of, they're protecting themselves because they don't want to see themselves as that.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, well, then I'm a bad person. And that's not true. People are nuanced and people have layers. But I think that's really hard. I think that'd be hard for my parents to admit, at least my parents to admit that, yeah, this happened. Mm-hmm.
Your parents are still together. Do you think they're a little bit better as they've gotten older?
Oh, they're just highly codependent.
Okay,
I
see.
It's this thing where, bless their hearts, I guess. I don't know. I think it's this thing where they're like, well, mom does this and dad does that and we're going to stay together that's okay. Puts up with me here, I'll put up with her here, and it's like this codependent thing of I'm never gonna leave and I'm never gonna leave, no matter how unhealthy it is, or just believing this is what marriage is. And I think that is kind of the line with this recent relationship too that I had, is like I've talked to friends about this, and it's like, was I just wanting to make this work despite it being unworkable, because I have that in me of I want to commit to this person despite these things, or was it me being a genuine, loyal, and committed person, which I am those things too. So it's a tricky thing to navigate, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you say that, because that was going to be my next question. Do you think you were codependent in this relationship? Like, y'all had a codependent
relationship. I think... I'm actually in Codependence Anonymous. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not supposed to say it's anonymous. I don't know. But I'm not talking about anyone else. But I've been in that for ended things. I got into that group. So I am I do identify as codependent. And I think my attachment style is anxious. It has been anxious. I'm working to secure attachment style. Yeah. And I identified those things with him. And I would say to him, I'm getting very attached to you. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about this thing. And I think my hope was for him to be that person who's like, okay, let's work together on developing a secure attachment and modeling that with each other. And that's what I think I would like in a future partnership, is someone who can say, okay, I'm going to meet you here and we're going to work on developing what it means to be secure. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, that was there and I vocalized it. And I was hoping we could be someone to model that for each other. Cause he also had his own stuff, and I won't go into that because I'm not him and it's not fair to talk about someone else in that way, but but it definitely was something that I felt like those traits were there, and there was so much potential because we were so hyper aware of them to heal.
Was there any sign that he was about to break up with you? Did you feel it? Was there any like sense, like, you know?
I think he slowly was distancing himself.
Okay.
I think what happened, it was interesting because I called him out for this and he's like, that's not what's happening. But mm-hmm. the beginning of the mm-hmm. relationship, I was very distant and I was like, I'm not ready for this. And it was this push pull with me. And then I finally was like, I'm all in. Let's do this thing. Let's work it out. And then he started distancing himself. And I always was like, so is it that cat and mouse thing of like, you finally got me to, I finally committed and now you're distancing, or is it? And he said, no, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So
you knew.
Yeah. So it did feel like he was slowly pulling away from the connection. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I guess a question that a lot of people have, because you went completely no contact.
Yes.
In 7 months now.
Yeah.
How do you get to that point with someone that you're just enthralled with? You just love this person, and then it's just no contact. Like, it's easier said than done, but how were you able to do
that? I think there was finally a point where I was like, I can't, this is so painful. And I think it, because I felt really embarrassed because I kept basically begging him to be with me. And it was at the point where that embarrassment and that pain became so great that I finally realized there was no possibility of us getting back together. And I think that was when he told me, and really our last interaction was not great. He told me he was going to start dating, like going on the apps. And I kind of was like, finally, like, I'm really mad at you. I'm really mad because, and then I quoted the thing that he said of, I'll be there on the other side. And I was like, I've realized I've been waiting for you. And I'm here and you don't want to, you're not interested in even pursuing anything with me. Yet you told me when we broke up that, oh, you're, maybe we will when you're in LA. Like, why would you, don't even say those things if you don't know. And then he was like, well, I have to get off the phone. I'm heading somewhere. And I was like, you just told me this and I'm emotional. And now you have to just get off the phone. He's like, I don't know. I'm just busy. And then we hung up and I was like, finally, like, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
And then I sent him a message and I said, I realize I have a lot of anger. I didn't realize I had, I can't talk to you anymore. And then I blocked him off of everything. Yeah. And that, I think that moment where it becomes so just like, whoa, what am I doing? Yeah. I'm putting myself through pain over and over again for what, this person who doesn't want me.
Yeah.
And I will never beg for someone to love me again. Yeah. And that's something I learned through that.
Yeah.
But I do think I hear that a lot, that it, you know when you know. You're done when you're done. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes time and time again. But, you know, and sadly with abuse, I don't remember the exact number, but it takes a certain amount of times for people to keep trying to leave until they finally leave. And that's, again, this wasn't an abusive relationship. Right. But it's like this pattern of like getting back together and finally just saying, all right, that's it. I don't know if that.
It answers the question. It seems like it's hard for you to move on sometimes from your relationships. And, you know, like you said, maybe it has something to do with what you've seen growing up. Like your parents, they stick in it.
Right.
They're no matter what, they're going to stick in it. So.
But, you know, it's common. Like people, when they're in emotional situations, they don't make rational choices.
Right.
You know, and that's for everybody. And people can look for, you know, reasons for it in their past or try to be like, oh, it's something wrong with me and it's something you have to break. But that's just common, you know.
Right.
Like anybody can tell you like, oh, why are you doing this? You need to stop. And you're just going to be like, I can't.
Right. I'm going to keep. And I had friends. I mean, I had a few different perspectives from friends. Some would be more tough love. Others would be like, well, I would be like, well, this is, what is the spiritual reason behind this? And I want to figure this out. And I tried to be like Buddha. And I was like, we could be friends and I can distance myself and see him as just this soul. And like, I had a friend who was supportive of that because he's like, all right, that's what you need to figure out. And then another friend was like, Kaylin, I hear you spiraling. I hear you doing this. This is not good for you. And I didn't listen to her. But then eventually her words, I started like I think she, her intention was to just get them in my brain somehow to start noticing these things. And then finally I was like, okay, you were right. But I think the biggest thing was no one in my life said, you have to, you're irrational and you have to do this. And I think that's a big, that's an important thing, because then you can't, someone says that or does that, then you don't feel comfortable to come to them anymore. But yeah, I think, so you're right in that sense. It's like, we're emotional beings and we're going to do that. It's fine. It's yeah.
I say, I feel like I can hear it to people chasing a high. Like some people who are like, you know, I feel like he's like, okay, I'm not getting the same high from this relationship that I did in the beginning. And you're like still chasing the high. Like it's still there. Like,
yeah.
I can, we can make this work.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like you're addicted to it.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
And I've learned now in the future, I'm not, cause I'm somebody who like when I fall very hard and I'm very much like, all right, this is it. But now I'm like, nope, next person, I'm going to wait like X amount, I don't know how long, but X amount of time before I actually plummet into the depths of our, you know, dynamic. Because it even though I feel that high at the beginning, it's not going to last unless
it's mutual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
And even if it's mutual, like when we started, it was like he would say things like, I feel like I've known you in a past life, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, suck that up. But it was so fast. I mean, I think I said I love you to him within a month of knowing him. So.
Yeah. If you could give advice to someone who's going through what you went through right now and struggling to break it off or see that that person does not want what they want right now, what would you give advice to someone or to your old yourself at that time who wanted that and see that it was not good?
I think it's hard because there's so many things, like I'm like, oh, you can make a pro and con, like all these like little things that we can just Google. But I think what really I had to keep telling myself, the person I wanted to be, and then over time started realizing that what I was doing wasn't aligned. I want to be a solid person. I want to be a person who only invites people into my life who want to love me and who's reciprocal. And I didn't, even though my actions weren't, and my actions weren't doing that. And then finally, I think I had to just, even though I didn't believe that yet, I had to keep saying to myself, I deserve somebody who is going to love me back. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't believe it, obviously. But now after having to just drill that in a bit, I was like, okay, what is my worth? What is my value? What, I mean, therapy, obviously. But really identifying who I want to be to myself, helped me see what, how I wasn't acting that way. I was acting in a way that was desperate, that was in my lowest self-esteem, that was saying, well, I'm going to chase this person who doesn't want me. And that to me now, I even talk about it, I'm like, man, I can't, that's so unfair. And I deserve love because I want to love myself so much that I don't go and I beg people to love me. So that's the journey I'm on, is that, and it sounds so cliche of like, oh, self-love, but self-love. It's really this, this solid sense that I know I deserve people in my life who want to be there, whether that's love or otherwise. And I'm continuing to slowly build those relationships. And also, and I think that's the other part of it, the advice is starting to find people, even if I was in, even in that relationship, I started to make connections where people wanted to be in my life. And I was like, oh, here's this relationship where somebody's saying, I love you, I value you, let's meet, let's do this thing, let's be active together. And I'm contrasting it with this person mm-hmm. who keeps saying, I don't want you. So I finally was building data of like, this is who I want in my life. So I think those, like, envisioning into those ideals and deciding mm-hmm. what am I doing that's against them?
So I have like a few more questions and then we're going to wrap this
up. Yeah.
Number one, are you on the market again? Are you looking to date? Are you doing healing right now? Are you,
How
are you looking right now after the breakup?
Well, I feel like someone told me, I think, cause I was thinking about where I am in my grieving process. And the other day when I text messaged you and I was like, I've hit a turning point and now I'm back to being kind of in a disheveled state. But I think what's happening, enough time is going by of me not thinking about him and also of being kind of starting to get ready.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, a thought came up the other day where I was like, why did I like he invalidated me so many times. And I was like, why? Like, that's so silly of me. So those types of feelings are coming up. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'm getting ready to get ready. Yeah. I downloaded the apps. I'm horrible on them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to, like, I have a lot of messages in my inbox and I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I'm open, I think, though, and I want to start building that with someone. I have a few, like, dating matchmaker people like contacting, but it's like hasn't been the right thing. So I think I am open and I have to be honest with whoever I meet that say, look, I'm still healing, but I also am ready. So two things, like the dialectic, two things can exist at the same time.
Okay.
But I think I'm like 95% ready.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good thing. Do you ever think you'll get married again? Are you open to it
I'm open to it, which I wasn't before, but I think.
You weren't before after your divorce?
Yeah. No, for a while I've been like, well, what's the point? But I think with the right person, like I want a teammate so badly that I'm open to whatever that entails. Yeah. I want a partner in every sense of the word. So. Mm-hmm. It could be marriage. It could not be marriage, that looks like. So,
Do you want a family, children?
I'm open to it.
Okay.
But again, it has a lot to do with that partner. Who is the teammate? Is a teammate somebody who I'm going to find, like, we're going to find each other and create this life together?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be all me feeling a certain? So I think it all depends on that person that – and maybe I have had thoughts of, like, maybe I will adopt a kid – later in life. Okay. So I think I might want a kid no matter what, but I would like a family. I would like to, especially because my examples weren't what I want. I'd like to create that and play and kind of envision into an experiment of a healthy family. What does that mean? What does that look like? So,
When's your birthday? Like, what time?
January 6th, Capricorn.
You're a Capricorn. Okay.
I have a Leo moon.
Okay. I'm a Leo. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Sometimes people want to know.
Yeah.
But okay. It was like so lovely.
Yeah, this is great. Here.
Like, you have made money.
Oh.
You have made the podcast.
This is great.
Good up to you.
Good up to you. Yay.
Fantastic. And that is all.
Okay, so
you look for him sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like looking to see if his car's, like, I think it's a normal thing while we're grieving.
Or just
driving.
I
think it's a normal thing, especially if you're in the same city, like, oh, well, I see this person. And like I think for the most part I never saw him. It was like, you know, 5 months went by and I was like, okay, I'm not going to see him out. But then I was house sitting in Venice and he doesn't live in Venice. I'm never in Venice. I do know that he likes to go when it's nice out, but it was Hanukkah and he was like, he must be home with his family. He can't
Is he
be
Jewish.
Yeah, okay, and so
okay,
am
okay.
I.
Okay,
but so I was walking, and I was like, I'm just gonna walk to the beach. It's a nice day out, and I started because I was staying in Venice, and I started walking up Abbot Kinney, and it was a Saturday. And there was a big crowd outside of a restaurant. And I was like, I wonder what's going on. Maybe it's like a grand opening. And I look and he's staring, like we would look right at each other. And I was like, shit. And then I didn't say hi.
Did he see you?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, we made eye contact. I was wearing my silly hat and I have certain tattoos that identify me. So I was like, he could have maybe not known it was me, but
what
I don't
the
know.
Chances? That is crazy.
It was crazy. And because I'm like, he doesn't live over here, but I saw him and I felt silly because now I'm like, I should have just been like, hi. But I didn't. I was triggered. I was super just like, it felt like he had just broken up with me. So I saw him and then he was on the sidewalk. I was walking the sidewalk. I see him. I walk around, go in the street and then keep walking. And I'm just like... Mm-hmm. Not gonna say anything to this person. So that was super traumatic. I went to the beach. I put my feet in the water, and I was just trying. I just had to ground myself because it felt like this. It's so weird how you could see someone and immediately be pulled back into that moment of shatter, I guess.
Right.
So
the universe is crazy. Like
it is.